Canos, canos, castarail, fleeing machines of the latest style. Athen ye went wi' a cheery smile, fae Davy Green the grocer o. A stickin' plaster for a sairer, sue the ointment he'll prepare. The druggist gars him something mair than Davy Green the grocer o. Lizzie dipped her pen nib into the ink and carefully wrote October the 15th, 1899, into the journal, blotted it, and then decided she couldn't think of a single thing to write. Kate was now studying at the university and had noted the term dates in her first entry of the journal, each underlined twice. Her cousin flicked over the pages, reading Kate's early observations of her life at university. Some were mere jottings. Quite often Kate went to bed with the journal and wrote after Lizzie was asleep. Now that her medical course had started in earnest, Kate had to work very hard to keep up with the male students. Many of the professors resented the fact that women were now permitted to become doctors, thinking them designed by Providence for lives of domesticity and childbearing. Others sincerely believed that the female mind would be tainted by exposure to such topics as anatomy and physiology. Lizzie paused at some of the pages. September the 30th. Divana University Library is very well stocked, and there are a chapel and tennis courts in the grounds. The tram service isn't suitable, and it is a 35-minute walk to get to class for a science lecture at 8 in the morning. The anatomy lecture hall is nearer home. I can walk there in 25 minutes. Note, must get a bike and one for Lizzie too. It costs £10 a year to cover my books, fees, clothes and travel, but Father has budgeted well and so shall I. No mixed classes in forensic surgery, midwifery or practical anatomy. And not all doctors will allow us at a bedside in hospital, as we are sometimes asked not to attend classes on such matters as rape or the insertion of a male catheter, though these may be taught separately. The professor of pathology is Mr. Arthur MacDonald Fortescue. He is as irascible as a capercaillie. His lecture table is littered, indeed his whole lecture theatre is littered with diagrams on the walls and on the floor. He moves restlessly around in his lab and in the mortuary as well as in the lecture room. He stalks up and down like a watchman with his fingers in his waistcoat pocket. I can hardly keep up with him when he's taking my notes. His red, swollen face always looks angry, as if he's about to burst. The men in the class call him Mad Mac. Lizzie smothered a grin at that. Kate had a vivid turn of phrase and could be very forthright. October the 1st. The professor of chemistry is Mr. Nathan Ogg. He has a grey beard and a moustache. He looks uncommonly like an old goat. The men in the class are very boisterous and immature in the main, so they give him a hard time. Today he shouted out, "I have been accustomed to address my class as gentlemen. I can see you are unfamiliar with the word." Mr. Ogg wears very thick spectacles, and I swear they steamed up when he said that. Mr. Henry Gleason is our professor of surgery. He's tall and well-built. He's always formally clad in frock coat and top hat. One of the male students circulated at the rumour that this was because his head is actually flat due to a trepanning experiment that went wrong. Professor Gleason is a stickler for timetables and exam deadlines. The boys call him the station master because when he's angry he whistles through his teeth. He despises the filthy habits some male students have of spitting in class and tells them so. "Ye can spit in the quadrangle, ye can spit for ye like, but ye'll nae spit here. Ye'd be as weel in the street as here. Weel, no, maybe no, you'd just get in the way of decent, respectable tradesfolk." Then he twists his pencil and cleans his ears with it. Her cousin winced at that, but read on. The writing here had become blotchy, as if Kate was so angry that the pen nib dug into the paper. "It's been 10 years since women were admitted to all the faculties here, but still there are only 9 women students in my medical course and about 100 men. You'd think these learned gentlemen would be used to the idea by now." I heard Professor Gleason say to another member of staff, "Female students either get wearied or get married. I shall do neither, leastways not till I get my degree, and then I'll be in the first ship back to India, where I'm really needed. October the 15th. I'm beginning to know some of my fellow students. Augusta Brown is a year older than me at 19. Her father's an explorer and author. She was brought up in Peking, and she shares a room on the opposite side of Greyfriars Lane from you and me. Nellie McGuigan is your age, Lizzie, born at Goulburn in India. Her father's a missionary in Udaipur. These girls bike to varsity. Lizzie, dear, remind me to ask Andrew Ducat to get us two bikes. He's sure to have contacts. Oh, and there are the boys in my year, William Cato and James Innes. William's father manages the West Rand mines in South Africa and the Transvaal district, but he was educated in Havana, though he's been back to South Africa a couple of times since. He stays with his aunt two houses along, with Augusta and Nellie. He is terribly worried about the political situation in South Africa at the moment. I know Jim Zane is less well, as he doesn't study medicine. He's a theology student, very serious. His father is William Innes, the city undertaker, and I think James is an only child. Their premises are off Musket Row, on our side of the Rothery. However, once or twice we've shared a seat at lunch and had some conversation. He dislikes cabbies with a passion. Lizzie looked back over her own entries, which Kate encouraged her to make. I want to know about your life too, Lizzie, and all the people around us. It'll help me feel as if I'm part of the neighbourhood. You must be my eyes and ears. September 29th. Must make a list of things to buy and to do today. 6:30. Left fire. Lay out Kate's clean clothes. 7 a.m. Breakfast porridge. Kippers and tea for Kate and myself. 7:30 a.m. Kate leaves for varsity. Mind the umbrella. 8 a.m. Dishes washed. Shopping at Hunter's store. Basket of buns. One penny each. Twa wee mutton pies. Tuppence each, sugar. Buy oranges, apples, cunnels, matches, satin, pepper and coconut. Arrange for Billy McCombie to deliver newspapers. Mary McCombie, Billy's twin, served me the buns. She looks nothing like her brother. She's a thin, freckly-faced quine, wearing a smock over her petticoats. Her hair's like seaweed, a tangle, as if it hadn't seen a comb for months. And Billy keeps himself tidy, as we can. Still, he's pleasant enough and just a bairn, of course. 9 a.m. Visit McGree Dairy for milk can for firm. Feather will drop off eggs and veg and his wife of the firm to the mart on Friday. 9:30. Speak to Mr. Edwards, the coalman in Greyfriars Road, to arrange regular deliveries for the shed. 10 a.m. Bake tarts and wee cakes. Take a carpet bag of Mother's jams to our downstairs neighbours, the Ducats. 1 p.m. He just stepped back upstairs for Sissy Ducat's kitchen. I've been there for 2 hours, but I think I've spent the time usefully. Sissy's agreed to cook a bit extra some days to share with us for a wee price, and because she has the big kitchen, she can help out if you want to get a dinner party. Fin I was there, Effie McCombie, Billy's mother, arrived, the woman for bides in Skiffy Street. Sissy told me that Effie's 30, she looks older. Then again, her eldest daughter Charlotte, was Sissy calls a natural, is 15, so Effie must have married awful young. Charlotte is not allowed to leave her house, so her mother keeps the door locked when she's working. It's either that or the asylum, Sissy says. With her man in jail, her life must have been very hard, but then again, her sister-in-law told me after she left that Sim McCombie beat her regular, so Effie's life is actually easier now he's jailed. Nae man would ever lift his hand to me, leastwise, nae mair nor ance. I gather he's a quick temper and left fingers, and that's what put him in the way of the police. Effie come in wearing a blue skirt and a patched petticoat. Her skin's like porcelain, that clear you can see the veins in it, except for her hands, which are re-draffy washing. She must have been bonny ance. Anyway, she's agreed to do her heavy washing as well as the Baxters, and I tell her you'd agree a weekly fee with Andrew Ducat, her brother. The Ducats are honest folk. They can be relied on to pass the money on to her. Andrew Duke had come in for the garden just after his sister Effie left. He's about 5 years older than her, deep-set een, doesn't speak muckle. When he does speak, his voice is real hoarse. He's quite lean, with greasy brown hair down to his collar and a straggly beard, and the funniest thing, his eyebrows run together. As you can, we share the washhouses and the sheds with the Baxter family next door, and their servants, the Ducats. If my father brings him a sack of tatties now and again, Mr. Ducat is happy to keep our wee strip of garden tidy. I give him a bottle of mother's honey ale as well, which may help that hoarseness that he's got. Sissy Ducat showed me how to cook seaweed she'd bought for the fishwife this morning. She took raw, satay dulse and ran the red-hot poker out it. The plum-coloured leaves sizzled and stank and turned a full yellow colour, and I think we'll try it. The kitchen smelt like deed socks after that. 4 p.m. Dusted and made a wee bit toast and did some darning. 7 p.m. Got supper ready for Kate and myself. Chicken soup with a side plate of bread and Darjeeling tea. We've got half a tea chest out to get through. October the 3rd. Was out in the garden pooing brummels when our next door neighbour Mrs. Baxter cried me over to the fence, opening the adjoining gate and inviting me to step in for some refreshment. I was a bit flummoxed, as I wasn't sure who to address the wife or sir, but she put me at my ease immediate. Glen Kindle's a bonny house, and the grounds are beautiful. Mrs. Baxter's only about 22 years old, and she insisted I card her Ellen. Yestreen, when Effie come up to collect the washing, she told me a little bit about her family circumstances. Sir Clive Baxter owns the flax factory next to the Shuttle Inn in the street for Effie Bides, across for the poorhouse. I've seen Sir Clive once or twice, out in a wheelchair in the garden, wrapped up in a double-breasted coat with an astrakhan collar. He wore a muckle-top hat with whisky white hair curling round his lugs, and he was taking snuff and sneezing into a reed-spotted hanky. Anyway, Effie says he fished Ellen Baxter out of the poorhouse to work for him afore he went blind. Her name was Ellen Burnett then. Nae long after that, he married her. He's 75 years old if he's a day. Whew. She got him promised to look after her brother Alec as well, because they were both orphans, so Alec bides with him now, quite the wee gentleman. He's out in the gardens most evenings, in his sailor suit and long ringlets, making a mess of his stockings. You can tack the loon out of the poorhouse, but you cannae take the poorhouse out of the loon, if he said. Same age as her Billy, but it goes to show what a bit of luck can do. The Baxters bide in the ground floor rooms. Sir Clive's nurse, Jean Baxter, sleeps upstairs, and there's an office and an attic up there as well. Jean Baxter is Ellen's aunt. I've seen her a rooning sir twice when the fishwife cried in. She's a queer buddy, about 50 years old, spicks and proverbs. She's got watery een like an owl, and smells of porter, and she aye wears a white linen much, and a grey Shetland shawl. You'd like Ellen Baxter, I think. There's nae airs or graces with her. She's a bit of a drama queen, though, flings her arms about a lot. She wears silk fight dresses and her petticoats hanging the line, oh, bonny lace. The day she was dressed in duchess satin, a puffed bodice, and a yoke was chiffon. Anyway, she took me in and gave me lemon tea. I was surprised they had nae maid, but she said Sir Clive doesnae like over many strangers in the house. Sissy cooks and Jean sees to the cleaning. It seems they entertain whiles and hire casual servants and on occasions. I didn't mean to be rude, but Sir Clive's off at all. I just asked in passing if he'd be joining us. Ellen threw back her head and laughed. Lord, no, he spends most of his time in his study. Jean looks after him for the most part. Then she dropped her voice to a whisper and said something I couldn't quite understand. An old man's needs arena great, my dear. I only had to hud it my hand a wee while, and excitement does the rest. She did not explain what it was she held, nor did I ask. Whatever it was, she seemed to find it awfu' amusing. She carried him a granal stick and said we must drop in by any time. Occasionally Sir Clive goes off in his carriage for a wee turn round the shore, but otherwise they near aye bide indoors.